Hello, Bulldogs. Thank you for tuning in to Who's Behind the Bulldog, Arvada High School's community interview podcast series. I'm your host and one of the assistant principals at Arvada, Jeremy Jensen. Each week, I'll sit down with someone from our Arvada community, be it staff, students, families, or other community members, to hear their stories. We'll discuss their histories, successes, challenges, learnings, future hopes and dreams, and much more. I hope you find some connections in their stories and hopefully are inspired to take some time to get to know them a bit better as our school year progresses. We have an amazing community here at Arvada, and I hope we can continue to strengthen that despite the challenges that await us in these unknown times. Today's guest is Assistant Principal / Activities Director Mark Abling. Previously, Mark was a Social Studies Facilitator at Arvada, as well as a variety of other schools. In our conversation, Mark opens up about how his life was impacted by a near-death soccer experience when he was in high school. He discusses how Arvada has changed in his time here, including the impact that new tech and restorative practices has had on our culture. He also talks about his unexpected path into education and how the things he prioritizes as an educator are shaped by an inequitable system. Thanks, as always, for tuning in to this week's episode of Who's Behind the Bulldog. Mark Abling, welcome to Who's Behind the Bulldog. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Tell the listeners a little bit about yourself and what brought you into education.
Well, I'm an Arvada native. Mom and dad are both Arvada natives as well. 36 years old, 14 years in education. Really, I think what brought me into education helps explain who I am too, is I didn't know what the heck I was going to do when I was in high school. I always actually hated school. My mom always throws this in my face now that she knows I'm an assistant principal, is after the first day of first grade, I came home and I said, "Mom, I'm done with school. I'm not coming back." She said, "Well, why is that, Mark?" And I said, "It's just not for me. I don't feel like school is my cup of tea." And she goes, "Okay, well, why don't you just go tomorrow and see how it goes?" And then pretty much once a month for about the first 6 years of my education, my parents and I had that conversation about how I didn't like school. I didn't necessarily think it was hard. I just thought it was really stupid. I didn't like the traditional setting of education, and I didn't really learn well with it. So in high school, I really hated a lot of my teachers. I did not go to Arvada High School. I'll let you guys fill in. I don't want to bash my old school, but many of you know which one it is. I had a handful of good teachers, but really only a handful of the rest of them. I always felt like I was a name on a piece of paper and just facing a crowd. And I hated that. I need more of a personalized thing. I went to college, had no idea what I was going to do. So I did the open option seeking business because that seemed like what everybody was doing back in the early 2000s. And then one night over some beers with some friends, we were complaining about some of our teachers. And I said, "Man, I could do a much better job than our teachers could." And one of my best friends, who I've known since before school even started, I grew up on the same block with him. He goes, "Prove it." I said, "What do you mean?" He goes, "Become a teacher." And I thought, well, I don't know what else I'm going to do. Let's give it a shot. And hey, that was when I was 19. I'm 36 now, so still at it.
You joined the profession as sort of like trying to be the antithesis of what experiences you had. What were some of the things that you did as in your time as a classroom teacher to make things more engaging for people such as yourself?
The number one thing that I tried to do is tried to actually get to know each one of my students to where I could have told you 1 to 3 personal things about every single student that was in my classroom. It was hard. But I definitely committed to that every year of teaching. The next thing was flexibility, really, that, you know, education isn't just a one-size-fits-all box. Alternative assignments are huge. Proving knowledge in different ways was huge. Not everybody thinks the same way. I mean, I almost dropped out of high school because I just didn't fit the norm of what it was. It wasn't because I was stupid. It wasn't because I didn't understand anything that was there. And it wasn't because I was incredibly brilliant either. I'm definitely not that. It was just I didn't conform to the status quo of the way of learning. So as a teacher, I tried to do the same thing. I also, this is going to sound like it's fortuitous that I'm at Arvada, I tried to transition everything into projects, you know, and this is a lot, you know, before New Tech Network and everything there, but I just thought projects were a much better way to learn, especially teaching social studies. The whole aspect of history can be done in projects and linking it to, you know, so what, who cares? So you learn about some random dead person who's been dead for thousands and thousands of years. Why should somebody in the 2000s care? And that's what I tried to link it as.
So you started off as a social studies teacher at the age of what, 22, if I did the math correctly?
I had to take an extra year in college because I didn't know that first semester. None of my business classes really applied, so 23.
So 23, and you were a social studies teacher for how many years?
11 years.
11 years.
Seven through 12.
And you decided to make a transition into school leadership. Why did you decide to join the side of school leadership?
You know, I knew by the end of my second year teaching that I wanted to be a principal. And I had a wonderful evaluator my first 2 years. His name was Steve Berger. I was at Summit Ridge Middle School down south in Littleton, feeds into Dakota, and he was just a staple there. He was an administrator there for 20 years. Great man, and he really helped me in the beginning part of my career just with the administrative aspect of teaching. I got promoted to department chair my second year teaching, and at first I thought it was a huge honor. It's like, this is amazing. They really respect me. I was with a veteran core of social studies teachers. And then I realized that I was the only one without kids. And at that time, you had to go to district meetings once a month on Tuesdays from 4 to 6. Everybody else had been DL and nobody else wanted to do it. So they didn't pick me because they respected me. They picked me because I was a low man on the totem pole, which is kind of the opposite of what a DL should be. But I took that as a chance to really lead. And some changes were going on in the district at that time. For those of you who remember, when CAP was rolling out, the Curriculum Alignment Project, we were all over the place in that school. And I helped take the lead in uniting us within CAP and teaching what the district was prescribing. And I really enjoyed it. I thought it was fun. I thought it was interesting. And Steve Berger, my mentor, told me, he goes, hey, you see systems pretty well, you know, you should think about admin. And I was like, you're crazy. I'm going to be a teacher. But then over the years, I started to like the systems of what the office was doing more. I really liked being a department chair. And then after our first kid was born, my wife and I talked. I'm like, hey, it's kind of time to start thinking about this. We got pregnant with our second kid, and that's when I went back and got the admin degree. And by the time she was born, I was a little after she was born, I was an AP.
So compare and contrast your life as an AP versus your life as a classroom teacher.
You know, they're very different. And I think the biggest difference, and I actually just realized this in talking to my wife, my wife's a teacher as well. She teaches middle school, has for 13 years. We met when she was student teaching, and it was my first year teaching. And she asked me what the big difference was. And as a classroom teacher, you teach bell to bell, and your tasks are bell to bell, unit by unit, as opposed to as an administrator, we don't have the bells that rule our lives. We are task oriented completely on what it goes. And I like that. And I think as a teacher, your role is more so within your classroom, trying to do everything you can to get those kids up to the next level to be successful, whatever that might be. And I think as an administrator, our role is to provide teachers with what they need to be able to do that, whether it be structures, whether it be help, whether it be strategies, whatever that is. It's just helping teachers to help the students. Sometimes that means you're helping students. Sometimes that means you're helping teachers. sometimes it means you're creating systems for everybody.
Talk with me a little bit about Arvada specifically. First of all, what drew you to Arvada High School?
I just got back from Mexico. I lived 2 years in Mexico. My wife and I taught there from 13 to 15. And I did 1 year in, it was really hard to find a job coming back because we had to interview out of the country. And, you know, the video conferencing was okay back then, but not great. And we didn't want to do any phone conference, phone interviews. I got a job actually at a charter in DPS, and wasn't really liking the mojo there. So I reached out to, so I did 1 year in DPS after coming back from Mexico, reached out to a couple of teacher buddies on some openings, and Heather Anderson, who was a English teacher here at Arvada, who then was a librarian for a while too, she said, hey, Arvada's gonna have an opening. You should look into it. And I said, okay, let me look around. And I ended up applying here at Arvada and then at Chatfield High School as well, down south. And I've been torn between the north and the south of Jeffco for really my whole career, being from Arvada, then teaching my first 6 years down south, and then now back in Arvada here. And I got the interview at Arvada on a Wednesday. And then I had an interview at Chatfield on Friday. And I interviewed at Arvada and got the job. And then I was really torn on if I should interview at Chatfield or not. And I remember I asked Gina if I could have a day. And she said, no, I need an answer. And so I said, you know what? Okay, I'll work at Arvada. And it was the best decision. And what really gravitated me back to Arvada was actually a lot of Gina, to be honest with you, because I'd heard such a great reputation of what she had done when she was at Chatfield. And then moving up to Arvada, I talked to Heather. I talked to Art Dwyer for a long time too. About it. And I wanted to be a part of what Arvada was going through. As an Arvada native, I liked the idea of bringing Arvada kind of back up to an educational standard where people were learning at a new level. And I don't want to say that they weren't before Gina, because I know a lot of great learning was going on. I wanted to work in a low-income school as opposed to a school like Chatfield at the time. Because when I was in Mexico, I taught at a prestigious private school. It was 20 grand a year to send your kid there. And that's not who I am. And I didn't like that. When I taught in DPS, one thing I really liked is it was a very low income school. It was off Federal Mississippi, about 98% free and reduced. And I really enjoyed teaching in that atmosphere. I feel like I could make more of a difference there. And I felt like if I was at Arvada, I could do more of a difference as opposed to at Chatfield.
So compare it. When you started, is this your sixth year at Arvada?
Fifth year.
Compare from when you first started to where we are now. What's that evolution been like?
Number one is the building. The building is so much better. I remember I stepped foot into my classroom first day and I'm at my desk and I'm starting to work and all of a sudden a wasp comes out of the ceiling and is flying around. And I look up and I'm allergic to bees. It terrified me. I was like, what the heck is going on? I went down to the office and they're like, yeah, we have flies and bees on the third floor in the ceiling. I'm like, well, that's going to be a problem. So the building has changed so much. You know, we took care of all the bees, took care of all the flies. Those are gone. A huge shout out to Will Wilson for helping getting rid of all those bees. The other thing is, I remember when students first came, I left my wallet in my car, and I had to go out to my car to get my wallet at lunch. And as I was walking out, there was just a huge smoker's pit that was on just south of the school, and there was like 40 kids who were just out there. And it was actually, it wasn't lunchtime; it was right after lunch during my plan. school was in, and 40 kids just smoking. And that was ended up getting killed and was gone. And that was a huge thing, a huge positive for that, of moving that. Level of instructions changed to a lot more engagement in the last 5 years. Not as many kids just kind of dazed within class. I think the projects have really helped within that. And another big one that I'd say is staff excitement. Staff is more excited within the building on being a part of what we're doing.
So from your end personally, what would you consider to be some of your biggest accomplishments in your time as both a teacher and as the activities director?
You know, I would say I feel my biggest accomplishment in general at Arvada is I'm trying hard to increase school spirit. The rallies is what I take the most pride in. My first year when I watched our rallies, I thought as a teacher, you know, no teacher was sitting with the students. All the teachers were sitting on the standing at the edge, not a part of it at all. Not many kids were cheering. Not many kids were paying much attention. And I told myself I wanted to try and change that. And when I got the role of the activity director, working with student council, we really changed that. The rallies are totally different now on where they are. So that's definitely my number one thing that I'm the most proud of.
Awesome. And then what would you consider to be like your biggest learning? If you had to pinpoint something that you're like, man, I am a totally different person now than I was back then, what would you say would be that particular thing?
I would say seeing students overcome so much adversity is the biggest thing I've learned, and helping students to overcome that adversity through keeping the standard high and through meeting them where they're at to get them where they need to go. I thought that I was good at that before I came to Arvada, but I quickly learned once coming to Arvada that I wasn't very good at it. I needed to be more flexible with my learning. And a lot of the stories that I heard from a lot of my students when I was in the classroom really shocked me, because I wasn't used to those types of stories, and I didn't realize how much Arvada had changed since I had graduated high school. And seeing that really opened my eyes and made me realize that I needed to kind of change some of my philosophies and learn a whole lot. I've definitely learned more in the 5 years at Arvada than I did in the previous 9 years in education.
So what do you most attribute to that?
So when I was a history teacher, one of the classes I taught was AP World History. And we learned a lot about Eastern philosophies. And one of them was Confucius. And if you go to my office and look on my door, I had 10 Confucius thoughts on my door. And I'm not a religious person by any means, but I am a philosophical person. And I think Confucian speaks to me in the sense of, you have to know that you don't know everything, and that actually the more you learn, the less you know. Because each new thing you learn, there's five more aspects that if you dig deeper to that. And I think it was just my age and learning about that at the age in which I did. I was in my late 20s, didn't have that young bravado of like machismo, which I was definitely guilty of in my early 20s. I became more humble and less arrogant. And that was a big step for me as a person, and knowing that there's tons more to learn. And there are very few times where I will say that I know beyond a doubt I'm right. I think the only time I'll say that is I know I have so much to learn, and I am right that all of us have a ton to learn no matter how much we know.
So keep going with that. What's an area then that you're feeling like I would really like to learn more in this particular area. If you're thinking ahead at maybe some personal goals in your growth as a leader at the school, what would you want to focus on?
You know, my long-term career goal is to be a principal. And I've never really hid that. I've told pretty much anybody. But in order to do that, there's so many different things that a principal needs to know and a principal needs to learn. I need to learn more about scheduling. I don't know much about the aspects of the master schedule and making that work. I've never had to create that. I need to learn more about building finances with SBB and the budgeting of staff and students. Mr. Jensen, as the instructional leader at our school, you'll like this one. I need to learn more about testing, just in general, about MAP scores and how those scores relate exactly to intervention. The MTSS process is something I need to dig a little bit deeper into as well. I think that's it, just to get a bigger, well-rounded sense of a school. I feel like since I've moved to the office, I've learned a ton about the activity director aspect of it, but now I need to learn more about what the other aspects are.
So this week, Gina just announced her retirement. Last week. Let's pretend, just in a hypothetical situation, Mr. Abling, that you are Arvada's new principal. What do you do in your first year?
You know, I've seen a lot of first-year principals new to the building, and I've seen some come in guns blazing trying to enact their policies, and I've seen others just sit and observe. And soak in everything. I think for this situation, me being at Arvada, I feel like I have a good grasp on what Arvada is. I would continue a lot of what Gina is doing in the sense of keeping things going with where they were if I was a principal at Arvada. I would say if I was a principal at another school, the first thing I would do is observe all the processes, to absorb everything and learn everything, because there's so many little intricacies. And, you know, before implementing any new change, making sure that I fully understood the state of the building, where it's at, and why it's at, why it is where it is.
I'd like to dig into a few of the things that you mentioned, like you like the direction that the school's been taking, and you kind of understand a lot of these things. What impact do you think that new tech has had on our community?
I went to almost every rebranding committee meeting that we had when we were doing it. We looked at a ton of different options of where we were going to go. New tech kind of fell in our laps one summer, and it checked the boxes of pretty much everything that the rebranding committee was talking about. The number one thing that I see that new tech provides is an outside professional development to help the teachers get to where we need to be. It helps us bring about a flip and change to be facilitators in learning, as opposed to the, and I know a lot of people hate this phrase, but the sage on the stage, the know-it-all of what it is. New tech has helped scaffold our learning as educators to put the onus on the student, as opposed to the onus on the teacher.
What about restorative practices? How's that impacted our school?
You know, I'm not going to lie to you, Mr. Jensen. I thought restorative practices was a hippie crock of crap the first time I heard about it. All I pictured was kumbaya in circles. And I remember sitting through one of the first district meetings for it, and I was still a teacher at this point in time, and I thought, and I grew up in a military family. My dad was in the Navy for 4 years, and it was a no-nonsense style of growing up. We didn't talk about feelings. I still rarely ever talk about feelings. My wife will tell you I don't have them most of the time. But as soon as I started, I was like, hey, I'm going to give this a shot. I think Andy Allen thought I was a jerk for the first probably month or so of being a principal with her here, because I literally called her twice a day with discipline that came my way, saying, all right, Andy, this happened. Here's what I normally do, but that's not restorative practice. So what do I do? And then she'd walk me through it. And I go, okay, this happened, same thing. This happened, same thing. I thought the craziest thing of what ended up happening was it worked. Her suggestions helped me to understand the situations better. It helped me to get an idea of where the kid was coming from. And it made me realize that, you know, that conventional punishment wouldn't have solved the problem. We needed something different for it. The repeat offenders just stopped repeating. You know, there was a girl group when they were sophomores. They're seniors now. And man, I attribute almost all of the gray hair on the side of my head and in my beard to this group of girls. By the time they were juniors, their issues were gone because of restorative practices. And if I would have just kept suspending them the old way of what it was, they'd still be thorns in my side. And I think I'd be fully gray if they were there. I'm a huge advocate for the ideas of what restorative practice comes from repairing the damage that was done. The punishment should fit the crime. And I don't necessarily mean punishment, that's the wrong word. The actions should fit the situation, I think is a better phrase for that to go.
Both these areas are pretty directly related to our work and our drive towards stronger equity. What's your hot take on equity in education currently, Mr. Abelin?
I don't think education is equitable, I guess would be a, if you want to call that a hot take, then you can take that. Oftentimes schools that are highly performing aren't performing because of the teachers. They're performing because of the students. And I think that schools like Arvada who struggle sometimes test score wise have teachers that work four times harder and that are way better than some of the more affluent schools who have higher test scores than us. It's no indication of the teacher. And I don't think that's equitable that some of those schools get touted as having amazing, wonderful teachers when in reality, it's not the teacher who's there, the situation that the students are in. I think funding is a huge thing for equity as well. Schools like Arvada, we're a bubble school. We don't get title funding and we need it. If you look at our feeders, almost every one of our feeders is title. Yet we're not. I've been digging into why that happens for the last 3 years as an administrator. I can't find the answers. Parents aren't signing up for it for free and reduced lunch. So then we lose out on that. And we appeal to the district to try and get some help. And sometimes the district helps us, but sometimes they can't help us. And that's a form of equality. And so we get left behind. School funding needs to get a whole different look. It's like the picture we showed in the beginning of the year of the fans watching baseball. You know, they're out there in center field. They got three boxes and there's an adult, an adolescent, and a child sitting there. If you go off of quality, all three of them get a box to stand on. Well, that puts the adult higher so he can see better. It puts the adolescent same so they can see. That kid still can't see. You know, the equitable thing would be to give all three boxes to the little kid so the little kid can see. We need more equity when it comes to different aspects of funding, when it comes to different aspects of school policy as well, and just helping us to get where we can go. And unfortunately, as a nation, we don't see that within education. It's more equality. I do have high hopes with our new president, with his wife being a teacher. This will be the first time that we have a first lady who has any, that I know of, with has any history within education. And I'm excited to see where education is going to go within the next 4 years, having a president who is the husband of a school teacher.
So big hopes from the national perspective. What are your big hopes and goals for Arvada's near future?
Get title funding. That's my big hopes. We need to be about 75%, so the district says. We need to be at that number by like September 20th. Usually we're at that number by January 1st. We hit that number, just not in their cutoff, and they don't give us the funding for it. I would love to see us get that funding early in the year because they don't give it to us.
Mr. Abelin, what has been your best failure?
My best failure, I was 15 years old when this happened. I grew up playing soccer. I played very competitively. I was playing for my high school as a sophomore, varsity as a goalie, which was pretty cool. I beat out the senior goalie, who was like 4 inches taller than me. For those of you who don't know, I am not a tall man. But back in my youth, I had springs for legs. And I was being recruited by a couple of colleges to potentially play for them as a sophomore. And I got hurt very, very badly my sophomore year. I went out for a corner kick. I dove out and a guy hit me in the side. And I broke all six of my ribs, completely broke in half the top four and cracked the lower two. I ruptured my spleen and I ruptured my kidney. And passed out and seizured and almost died. And it was a hell of an experience. I lost 50 pounds while I was in the hospital, missed 2 months of school, almost flunked the 10th grade because hardly any of my teachers would actually work with me. They just thought I was ditching, even though I had doctor's notes and surgeries and all that stuff to prove it. And I fought back. I gained my weight back. It took me 9 months to recover from that. And I made the team the next year and went out for a ball that came on an identical play. And I didn't jump out for it because I was scared. And I had fear in my eyes. And I knew from that moment I couldn't play at the level that I did before. And it ended, I wasn't the same in playing. I was scared. I didn't dive as hard as I did. I didn't play as hard as I did. It made me realize that, this is a cliche statement, but you really can't die at any time. I think a lot of us who haven't had near-death experiences don't take that into account. You kind of assume you're, I don't want to say immortal, but it's not going to happen to you. And knowing my whole life, I wanted to play soccer. I wanted to play for the U.S. Olympic team as their goalie. That was my thing. And that junior year, when I realized that I was afraid and I couldn't do it, it humbled me in a way that I hadn't seen before. And it was the best thing that ever happened to me in hindsight, because failing one dream opened the door to any other possibility. And I was just a young, dumb kid who thought I'd be a professional athlete, just like so many others who were out there. And that failure made me realize I got to rely on my brain more than my athletic ability. So,
man, that sounds intense and scary. Sorry you had to go through that in 10th grade. Mark, what advice do you have for other educators?
The best advice I can give other educators is don't think that your shit don't stink. All of us have room to grow, no matter where we are. Matt Teagarden says this a lot: seek first to understand, then to be understood. And that statement right there is huge. Try and understand the situation. Try and understand everything before you try and put your two cents out there. And the other thing is, have fun. Is celebrate those little moments of fun that are in the classroom. The funny jokes that happen within the classroom. Kids need humor. Kids need laughter. Don't take yourself so serious. Realize that as a teacher, you're gonna be wrong. And embrace it, have fun with it, model to the kids that it's okay to be wrong, as long as you figure out what, what right is. Even if you don't know what right is, that's perfectly fine. Show that you are a human, not just this person who is a know-it-all in front of them.
Mark, thank you so much for your advice and your time here today. I really enjoy working alongside of you. I really enjoy learning alongside you. This year, last year, I look forward to our continual work together here at Arvada, and it has been a pleasure speaking with you here today and learning about a little bit about your history.
Well, hey, the pleasure's mine. Thanks for having me on here.
Thank you all for tuning into today's podcast. I want to encourage you to take a minute to reach out to today's guest and make a personal connection. Until next time, this has been Jeremy Jensen with Who's Behind the Bulldog.